Ah, I guess there is a double rat beef. There is a double rat beef.
Yes,
So I have to do. Okay, well.
there is. There's Gucci Mane, and then, yeah, Jesus, that's funny.
There's, yeah, Meg Block, which is also
Which
rat
is just, which
beef.
is giant, just rat beef, you know. And Obama, fuck it.
That's why this. Starts off in the butt.
Fuck it.
Okay, so I'm gonna move that to the beginning of quick hits then. So
oh, Obama, yeah.
We have a trilateral rat beef. Real hot girl shit. Welcome to Audio Face. This is episode 167.
Hello, humans.
this is now war. This is the proxy.
Mine
war.
Was like half a mistake, half on purpose. So you know.
Mine was like, what can I say in the split second that I decided to like partake in revenge?
But it wasn't that bad.
This is very like spit take revenge. This episode 167 of Audio Face.
Yes. What are we?
A reverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters.
Who are you?
That's a question I usually reserve for therapy, but I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And on this podcast, we have like rat beef three, like a three-peat. Like,
yeah.
It's literally, we have so much news. We have a lot to get through. We have three editions of rat beef. One's a little bit gratuitous, but we definitely have two good editions of rat beef going on here. We're going to talk as quickly as possible about the Gucci Jeezy beef because it just gets in the weeds. We also have the Meg Thee Stallion Tory Lanez beef, which hit a fever pitch as we had Good News by Meg Thee Stallion album drop this week. And because this is a podcast where we review albums, we have, if we can call it that, While the World Was Burning by St. John and So Help Me God by 2 Chainz to review this week. I might be coming in hot this episode. I don't know. I feel kind of neutral, but we might be coming in hot. This is Audio Face. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Audio Face Pod and at youtube.audioface.show where we have new clips dropping pretty much every single weekday and on the weekends too. Sometimes two clips now because we do too damn much content. No new singles this week, but speaking of content, we're going to have new episodes throughout the rest of the year, essentially. I think we'll be skipping a like live, quote unquote, normal episode December 6th or something. But instead, we'll be doing an Avalanches bonus episode because the Avalanches will be releasing an album in the mid-December. And that's when we'll do our court packing episode when we mention all of our like favorite albums from the year. So send us your favorite albums from the year that we've missed. And then we have the Audio Face Awards. And then we're taking our damn break. So let's get into part one in this episode, 167, one for the ages, of Rat Beef.
Rat Beef, nigga!
Punk ass move.
Jerry Tone. Nigga, do something. Stomp him in the nuts. I'ma stomp him in the nuts. Stomp him in the nuts. I'ma stomp him in the nuts.
So, Versus season two, the like thing that started during quarantine where like two rappers would do a rap battle and just became a larger thing. It wasn't a bad idea. Like, it's a good idea, so I'm glad it's like has success to it. But season two has just taken place and it's Gucci versus Jeezy. It is
there's a lot with this one.
There's a lot to go in with there. Both Gucci and Jeezy like have their histories and in Atlanta trap scene and coming up together, they've done a song together, So Icy, and people like the song, but there was some dispute over like whose song it was. And because it ended up being on Gucci Mane's album first, and then Jeezy wrote like a diss lyric afterwards, and so there's been some like petty beef. There's been some actual like non-serious serious stuff about like Jeezy's threatening to snatch the chain off of Gucci Mane's like, neck.
Didn't some dude try to bust into Gucci's house too?
Yeah, that was also a thing to do because when you rap about this shit, sometimes shit happens and shit gets real. When keeping it real goes wrong. But they had the rep like thing on Versus. It was like a fun thing to watch. But as of stuff that comes out of it, it seemed like it ended on like a mostly nice sort of thing.
Yeah.
They ended up doing So Icy together as like an end thing. A lot of people said Gucci Mane won. A lot of people said Jeezy won. It's whatever. But I just think there were a lot of stakes going on in this rap beef. There was a lot like going on for like the battle itself. But at the end of the day, it was definitely just like an entertainment kind of thing. Not the more like real kind of rap beef like we had where the Drake Pusha T rap beef that started entertaining and then just got like brought a tank to a knife fight. Just
which
literally
is just my favorite thing ever.
No Vaseline might still be my favorite rap beef of all time, but this is definitely a close second. Okay. And then we of course have the Rap Beef Awards or like something similar to that. Maybe not an award show, but maybe we should do it. No Name and J. Cole,
and we J. did Cole, this year. Yep.
And later this episode, we're going to be doing Meg Thee Stallion, Tory Lanez, which is a pretty damn rap beef and a half if I've seen one. So we'll get into that later. But that was that rap beef. So as we kind of continue some of the updates in this part of the episode, we talked about last week how Jeremih was in intensive care after contracting COVID-19. Yes. He was hooked up to a ventilator. A lot of people were sending out their like prayers and well wishes for him. We do have like a minor update that he is doing a little bit better.
He's starting to get stabilized.
Yeah, stabilized. Hopefully like, yeah, generally stabilizing. We'll be able to like pull through. Progress is being made, but like not out of the woods yet. So it's looking fairly positive again, like this, what we know a lot more about the virus this third go around than we did earlier this year. So we can better kind of treat it. We know what medicines work with it. And he's younger, so generally looking better. But of course, everyone be careful, wear a damn mask, you idiots. And except for the people who are already wearing masks, you're fine. Benny the Butcher, meanwhile
in non-zigzag land.
Yeah. Benny the Butcher was shot in Houston after 5 men attempted to rob him at gunpoint. This was kind of ridiculous because there was like a high-speed chase involved.
Yeah, it was the whole thing.
Yeah, this was like the whole, like, a little bit of a movie, as it were. Apparently, Benny, born Jeremy Damon Pennick, who was visiting a Walmart in Houston, and
when it goes down to Walmarts, apparently.
Literally. It's never the Sam's Club. It's always the Walmart.
But one
of the five... So basically... 5 men in a car pulled up next to Benny and his like crew, demanded their chains, had him at gunpoint. One of the 5 men shot Benny in the leg, at which everyone fled. Benny was hospitalized, but is doing okay, as a rapper almost has to do at this point. There was immediately a video available afterwards of him limping into a private jet, so...
You know how that works.
You know. But yeah, glad he is okay. Let's just maybe not try to kill each other. I don't know,
just zigzag instead, you know? Just get out of it.
Do the dash.
Audio face friend of the show, Lil Wayne.
Yeah, the gun corner of the show.
He was charged with a felony weapons possession. If convicted, that probably will not happen. He could face up to 10 years in prison.
Yeah, this has to do from the discovery of a firearm on Lil Wayne's private plane back in December of last year.
Yes.
So, of course, the law takes a little while to go through these things. That all being said.
Also, it was here. Here's all of the juicy goods that were found on his plane.
Oh, yeah.
Gun, bullets, cocaine, ecstasy, marijuana, heroin, painkillers, prescription strength, cough syrup, so you know, for that lean, and $26,000 in cash.
It's definitely a Queens of the City song.
Probably.
if you know, you know.
Yes.
But let's see. One of the court papers says Lil Wayne is charged with possessing a gold-plated handgun in his luggage on a private plane. There's no allegation he ever fired it, brandished it, used it, or threatened to use it. There's no allegation that he is a dangerous person. The charge is that because he was convicted of felony in the past, he is prohibited from possessing
exactly.
a firearm.
Exactly.
That's the thing. It's just a...
You cannot have a firearm if you've already had a felony, so you know.
Don't hear a lot of conservatives talking about that when they talk about gun control and people
yes.
with violence, but there's that. And since we are in this sort of segment of audio phase where we're giving updates on things, there's been a long going story with a Radiohead concert.
8 years ago, there's a concert in Canada for Radiohead where the stage collapsed and it killed one of their techs.
Yeah.
Which they've been like going through an ongoing legal battle and whatnot with like the engineers and stuff, or like going back and forth between like the district engineering people
yeah.
to say, hey, so, there is some structural faults. And
so,
finally something happened.
So to give some context here, Radiohead were scheduled to do a concert in Donsview Park in Toronto in June of 2012. When part of the stage apparatus collapsed, killing Scott Johnson, who was a tour technician, had been with Radiohead for a very long time up until that point. And Radiohead just kind of since then went on a warpath of like, why was this not handled properly, regulated properly.
Exactly. And who's there needs to be justice served and whatnot. The people
wasn't even investigated properly.
No, it wasn't.
And so there were like lawsuits with like Live Nation involved and all these other different things. There was no fault ever admitted at court. I think there were some like damages paid here or there, but there's never really been admittance. But this past week on the 16th of November, the Discipline Committee of the Association of Professional Engineers in Ontario, which is the committee you were talking about earlier, they conducted a hearing to investigate Dominic Coglieri, who is the engineer responsible for the design that collapsed. And because Mr. Coglieri is retired and there's like a statute of limitations that is over and he's basically outside of any sort of need to explain himself or hold himself accountable, he admitted fault and noted his catalog of errors. But as Radiohead noted on an Instagram post, it's 8 years too late.
Mm-hmm. So he admitted to it 8 years too late that he messed up, that he had negligence and stuff that of a design that led to the collapse, but there is no. But since he's retired now, he can kind of get away with it per se, which is total bullshit. And 8 years way too late. So, which is really crap for the family too.
Yeah.
So
it's really it's a good thing we talked about this. Of course, it's a story that's long predated Audioface, but we have talked about it a little bit. The extent to we've done this podcast, and it really goes to show like the actual sort of heart and character that just Radiohead as a band have.
Oh, yeah.
Because when the law wouldn't even kind of go into this, and you're going against like the big like concert venue companies like Live Nation and things like that. Radiohead was just very using their platform in the same way they would advertise an album to talk about this person's life and what they meant to the band and that there needed to be justice for this case. Mm-hmm. So much so that like 7 years later, with the same force they are doing to advertise anything they would do, they're talking about it. So like it just goes to show the character of the band, and it's definitely too late, but at least some solace is served in that.
First album review.
First album review of the week is Good News by Megan Thee Stallion. It's 17 songs long, about 50 minutes long, and this is Megan Thee Stallion's first proper long play release.
Mm-hmm.
She released Suga earlier this year, and of course she's had like a smattering of different
other
releases.
Stuff here, there. Yeah. And different projects that she's done. I mean,
Yeah, relatively new to like the rap and trap scene, Houston like era, like 2018 kind of stuff. But with incredible like collaborations with Beyonce, with Cardi B, has really kind of blown up and made a name for herself here. And also made a name for herself in relationship to alignment with the Breonna Taylor stuff with Black Lives Matter this year.
And she did, and she talks about that in the album for sure.
Yes, and also in the news because the incident with Tory Lanez, which is addressed very early on at the beginning of the album with the song Shots Fired. And if it wasn't for me, same week you'd have been indicted. You walk the M's, not the talk. I guess that made my friend excited. Now y'all in cahoots. You a puss in boots. You shot a 5'10", bitch, with a 22. Talking about bones and tendons like them bullets wasn't pellets. A pussy nigga with a pussy gun in his fillet. Okay, he in the back sitting. He keep calling me a bitch. We all know the shit I could have came back with. He talking about his followers, dollars and goofy shit. I told him, you're not popping. You just on the remix. Now here we are, 2020, 8 months later. And we still ain't got no fucking justice for Breonna Taylor. Any nigga on that nigga side is a clout chaser. A bitch who we fucking know, a hoe that he paying. Jesus Christ. Do you have any thoughts about that? Because that's...
So this is the first track?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's just literally... It's basically like you're on an aircraft carrier on an F-18 and it just like catapults you and you're just like, Jesus Christ. Like the very first time you do that, that's basically the beginning of this album where it just goes at it, just full gas. All gas, no brakes. And it goes on a whole Tory Lanez stuff, stuff about Breonna Taylor, a bunch of other things that go on into that track where just there's so much to unload. And I mean, it's only like a 3 minute song too.
But it's like the elephant in the room is not only just like danced around or like immediately just, it's like gone it's into gone whole hog.
Yeah.
And like, she's not holding back. She's like straight out calling out Tory Lanez for lying about the whole thing to save face, for definitely doing everything. Mm-hmm. Referencing the accusations that we'll talk about a little bit later in the podcast.
And then she's the best part. I love it. She's like, I ain't no snitch. I didn't say shit, but you shot me.
Yeah. And then played this whole like fuck shit game around it afterwards.
Yep.
So of course I'm going to talk about it. So, it's a really interesting dichotomy because Meg Thee Stallion is also talking about how there still hasn't really been a lot of justice for Breonna Taylor.
Exactly.
And then contrasting that with there still hasn't been justice in her own situation.
Yep.
Talk about that with like the like the idea that black women are under or like mistreated in society more broadly, and this being an excellent case study for that and showing that. But it comes off so hot, like so fire. This would definitely count as rap beef because Tory Lanez released SoundCloud album.
That was the most bitchy thing that we've heard all year. And that's why he's got nominated for the Noted Little Bitch Award, because it was horrible.
A really competitive Noted Little Bitch season, but like one nonetheless.
Yes.
Definitely check out the Audio Face Awards for that later on this year. Way better than the Grammys. Only good award show out there in music world. But Shots Fired is just such a like a hard-ass start to a trap album this year, especially. Like, it's up there with Runnin' up this year, which is like you're starting all gas, no brakes. But I'm glad that she does this, because this actually frees up the rest of the album.
Exactly, to do whatever you want.
To just be herself and do the old thing. Yeah. So it's not like it starts with an intro. It's just like, this is the first song. Yeah. And she's going in, this is how it starts, and it's just how it is. So I'm very much liking that. Then we continue on to Circles, which is, you know, just like pretty sort of decent fare for the like for her album. I would say the album generally production-wise oscillates between good enough and generally outstanding production.
Mm-hmm. There's only a couple tracks I didn't really like. Right after Circles, Crybaby with Da Baby, I didn't like at all. Like, that's just your typical trap production, and also it's felt like a Da Baby song and not a Meg Thee Stallion track.
Yeah.
So that was my issue with that, because it's more of with him compared to her music and stuff, where it's just like, eh.
It's definitely one of the times where I, that's one of those few times where I can actually listen to Da Baby, but it's like you have to, we've talked about this a lot, we have to pare down one artist in order to like let another artist flourish, and then that combination actually works and feels decent. But yeah, I'd say the beginning of the album, I did a weird thing where the third time I listened to this album, out of the three times I listened to it, I listened to it backwards, and I like that a lot more. But the beginning of the album, I think, does what a lot of trap albums do, which is like get these sort of like heady, slow, like trap house bangers like out of the way, so the rest of the album can explore whatever the artist wants to explore. I guess you get it a little bit with Do It On The Tip, sort of, but I guess it's more like a bridge on that.
Yeah.
It's just like, you sort of would expect a Meg Thee Stallion, City Girls collaboration, because they have been like, even before album and even before Sugar, they had like gotten along and been friends and been related, so there's that going on. He got you looking stupid, but you wanna argue with me. I got a couple of bitches mad cause I don't fuck with them no more. Since you say you so unbothered, what you speaking on me for? Do it on the dick, do it on the dick, do it, do it, do it on the dick, do it on the dick, do it, do it, do it on the dick, do it on the dick, do it, do it, do it on the dick, do it on the dick, do it, do it. Top notch bitch on A-list dick. This city girl shit can't flex like this. Old country ass bitch can't dress like this.
That's a lot of ratchetness in the song. It's hilarious.
Cute, very much so. But also, again, whereas when the City Girls had a full album that we talked to about and reviewed, where it was like, which way too much ratchetness.
It's just like, turn that shit to 15.
They're both pared down here enough to where it works out. And again, like, I had a tolerance for WAP, and I was like, that was totally fine. I didn't like cringe with that. But like, City Girls was just like an extreme.
Yeah. Pussy Talk still makes me feel uncomfortable. I can't listen to that song. Like, you think WAP is bad? I'm like, you need to listen to City Girls. Because I remember that first, when I was sitting there, I was like, all right.
One of my newer favorite genres of YouTube video is like you pay to send someone a video on a live stream, and if they laugh or something, they'll give like the pot of money to the person who sent them the video. So it's like a game you play.
Never heard of that. And
It would be funny to have a game where like Ben Shapiro just takes videos online and someone sends like $10 to see like how much he cringes by sending him the Pussy Talk City Girls video. That's why that all came to me. But what you do get through here is Megan Thee Stallion is one of the like best, like not just even with the female caveat, but just best trap like rappers lyrically in the game right now this year. Cause like it's not, she doesn't have filler in her words. It's not like this weird auto-tune flair.
No.
She's just like good at spitting, good at bars, good at like constructing them, and it doesn't feel like stale or flat.
No, my only concern is that I wanted to now, after this album, is her next work to now broaden her horizons and do a little bit more with her voice, because that's the only thing that occasionally, like, especially towards the middle of the album and a little bit towards down, it can get a little monotone per se for her voice.
Yeah.
But the lyrics in there are fantastic. So that's my only really critique of the album. Is that it's just occasionally you can get a little flat in that regard for the vocals and stuff, but when you listen to the actual lyrics and you look it up and are like, okay, there's a lot of substance in here. Yeah. But I was just trying to deliver on experiment a little bit more, you know, maybe hook up with a couple of different producers, whatever, to see what you can go. I mean, Metro Boomin, Meg Thee Stallion collaboration I want.
Yeah, I'm skipping very like far down to talk about a thing you mentioned, whereas outside, where Megan Thee Stallion is doing a little bit more of like a singing kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to like make comparison for like this sake, but Cardi B's Invasion of Privacy is a natural sort of comparison. Mm-hmm. Similar career trajectory, also first album kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there were songs on that that kind of fell into more of a trap and beat kind of thing, rather than more of a spirit.
Even on the SZA too. Yeah. Freaky Girl's the same thing.
Yeah, but like with Outside specifically, I don't like Meg Thee Stallion's singing voice. So I know it's real. The same chain that you got when you say let's chill. I know how much that costs, them diamonds in your mouth. I told them buy the house, but don't be coming in and out. Baby, can you tell me, have you ever heard of polygamy? It's only me and you, but I got many personalities. Sometimes I like to shop, sometimes I like to bop. Sometimes I like it from the back, sometimes I be on top. And I think maybe she does explore that. Should we explore that in a way that where she practices a lot more and refines that in a way? Because definitely, I think she can just like her brain can come up with a bunch of words together that sound great. Better than 50% of the men like trap artists who are releasing albums this year. So like, let's work with that, and then the singing can come afterwards. Because yeah, if we get back to kind of on track and order, Freaky Girls with SZA is a good combination with that.
Yes.
Hopefully SZA is releasing something soon. It's definitely been a minute. Body is the other like WAP level ridiculous.
I like Body because she said this is a song where it's just female empowerment. Say whatever the fuck you want. Anybody, don't care. Just go.
Yeah.
The category is body. Look at the way it's sitting. That ratio so out of control. That waist, that ass, that witness. If I were me and I would have seen myself, I would have bought me a
drink. And there are a lot of even different women in the music video, including trans women, which was kind of an amazing move for her to go for as well. Even that being like a difficult subject in society writ large, especially in the black community, when we're talking about black misogyny earlier in the album. So pretty, it's pretty catchy. I do really enjoy that. You have intercourse with everyone's favorite like pop Jamaican pop canon mustard.
That one I didn't feel. I didn't like it that much. It was alright, but.
Yeah, I feel like the album at least like sustains a decent enough vibe as you're going through
it. Oh, for sure.
And I liked most of the features on it. Mm-hmm. Lil Durk and DaBaby I could go without, but City Girls was great, Popcorn and Mustard I can live with.
And then you have the Savage remix with Beyonce, which you heard earlier this year.
Which is very good.
Which is just fucking amazing.
Yeah. You have Girls in the Hood, which sounds really classic.
Which is, it's the theme of Boys in the Hood, which is, you know, which 21 and Metro Boomin did something that like had a tiny bit of chime in there. Yeah. That was pretty cool. There's another song in here that it featured part of the Jackson 5, and I'm trying to remember what song that was.
I don't know, remember exactly, but I didn't even notice that in my first listen. That's pretty interesting. Just to, like an attention to detail I don't see from a lot of albums this year. But at least me, just as a me Dan pick, my favorite song on the album is at the end, Don't Stop with Young Thug.
What's up with Young Thug? I think it's a fantastic ending song. One of my favorite ending tracks so far this year. And again, I really like Young Thug as a feature on a lot of work. I think Been By Himself is just kind of bland, but he can compliment, especially he can compliment female rappers quite well. Off the strip and shaking that ass with children for the red race. What my thought said, I just read this bitch like a bird. Yeah, what my thought said, when we hit it for the best, say slash, slash. Don't stop, pop that cat, just like that, shake that shit, work it, bitch. Don't stop, pop that cat, just like that, shake that shit, I'm gonna blow him like AC. Give me big head like IT. Lick, lick, lick me till I scream. Twist his tongue like I mean. My body so out of this world. Change my act, name to Astro World.
And like Young Thug's got a good enough, like he can do sort of a singy thing, definitely a rappy thing. So it works very well feature wise. But Buddha Blessed definitely blessed that beat. Yes. It's like a mix of like industrial electronic mm-hmm. music, but like a really tight trap beat. And a lot of the trap beats in here don't feel very repetitive or generic.
No, that's
enough. A lot of it feels like rap too. Yeah. So like it's good.
So like it's the mix. It's like the perfect mix of doing a lot of trap, a lot of experimentation, and then also a lot of rap as well. So it's a combination of all the three that stuff of that I like into an album. Where the production value of every track, more or less, there are a couple exceptions, like with Crybaby, I think that production's kind of cheap because it feels like just he had a little too much input on there. And then I really didn't like Intercourse that much. Sounds funny out of context. But but for the rest of the album, it's fantastic. Don't Stop is very, very good as an ending track. I like it because after Savage and Girls in the Hood, like that's like a perfect ending track because Savage and Girls in the Hood, that's a lot of a lot of floof in there, but now with that ending track, it's good. So
yeah,
one of my favorite rap albums of the year so far.
I would definitely suggest like listening to it almost like backwards because if Megan Thee Stallion's anything, it's like a very like loud, dancey, hype up kind of like production sound along with what she's talking about, like definitely strip club music. And you really get that through like most of the album until, or like, I guess you're doing it in normal order. The first three songs are just sort of like the most fillerish of all. Like one of the things I really appreciated about Sugar earlier this year was how concise it was and how quality all the songs were, including Original Savage that was on there. And this is bigger. Some of the songs that are on here are better than Sugar was for sure. But there's something I miss about the concision, and if maybe this album was 10 minutes shorter, it could have gotten there. And yeah, I definitely want to see growth and what happens like later from there.
Yeah.
Is this better to you than, off the top of your head, this isn't like Audio Face Awards binding, but is this better to you than any of the male trap artist albums that have come out this year that come to mind immediately?
I like Savage Mode 2 more, personally, because I didn't feel like there was, because with this, there is a couple filler songs in here. I do like the conciseness of the songs. I love the conceptness of Savage Mode 2. That's the thing. I love how the production of it, everything else. It's still probably my favorite rap album of the year. And I like Sugar a little bit more than this just because of the conciseness of it. But this is still fantastic. It may grow on me a little bit more later on in the year when I listen to it more. But still, I like Savage Mode 2. That's still probably my favorite so far of the year.
I think Savage Mode 2 and this are cut from a different kind of cloth because like that's particularly a project with like two artists and they're kind of going together.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Whereas this is like a solo artist, like big album. So like I get where you're going with there and you can even like have that preference. But like for me, I guess there's some things I like about it more than this, but I think they have almost like an equal amount of filler, at least if I'm thinking about that. But at least like Savage Mode 2, it does feel like more of a complete album. But this is definitely
as a single artist work, it's just fantastic.
Yeah, because like definitely in the running with Eternal A Take, far better than like much of what has come out this year. What the fuck, Gunna released something this year?
No, Jesus Christ.
What the fuck,
Gunna wanna
6ix9ine apparently released something this year?
We don't
like there's so much stuff that got a lot of streams, it's way worse than this. So I'm glad Meg Thee Stallion's got an album that's come out this year.
And it's getting hyped up and stuff too, which is good. So
yeah. Arbitrary scale this week is the COVID-19 tier system, something that was introduced literally like minutes ago, apparently, because we didn't have this last time. No one had like advertisements about this or anything. But on Audio Face, we do arbitrary scales because what we said in the review is what we meant, and any kind of number adding anything to that is just arbitrary, and we just admit that to you up front rather than confusing you with numbers and letters and shit. Anyways, this week it is, the COVID rates, and there's yellow, red, purple. No, there's yellow, orange, red, and purple. And purple is the worst.
Yeah.
More severe.
Which is better for Audio Face? Is widespread better or is minimal better?
Wow, Audio Face is a show about morals. Widespread is better.
All right. Good man. This is like, okay, this is Orange County 2 weeks ago when it was like on the brink of being widespread, but everybody was protesting about it and saying that wasn't going to happen. So then in a week it was going to be widespread anyways because of all of the right-wing protests of don't wear your mask and don't do curfew shit happen.
So it's like a reddish purple.
So it's a reddish purple, exactly.
It's solely because of Huntington Beach.
Yeah, 100% because of Huntington Beach.
Absolutely. I'm going to give this... No, yeah, that's a good one because album-wise, this is like... I really want this to be hot, like sugar hot. And it's like simmering and it's almost there and it's boiling, but it's not quite like hot. But goddamn, I really did like it. And I think there's a lot of songs that, like, the songs there hold up, and I can listen to it as an album, and I didn't feel like it's overstaying its welcome too much. So I'm going to stay right there with your score as well. And coming out of that Meg Thee Stallion review, that does bring us now to the part two of this episode's Rap Beef.
Rap beef, nigga!
Punk ass move.
Jerry Tone. Nigga, do fingers. Stomp him in the nuts. I'ma stomp him in the nuts. Stomp him in the nuts. I'ma stomp him in the nuts.
Tory Lanez and Megan Thee Stallion have been going back and forth at it ever since Tory Lanez shot Meg Thee Stallion in the foot.
Yes.
And proceeded to act like a bitch about it, lie about it, release a whole album gaslighting about it and claiming that Meg Thee Stallion was just making a thing for show. All during the context in which Breonna Taylor and other black women and other black trans women are basically just being ignored in this movement where, broadly speaking, black people most broadly are being ignored in society. So in this moment where you could have shown on being like a decent side, you literally, as Sean said in another episode, shot himself in the foot. But Tory Lanez pleads not guilty to the Megan Thee Stallion case. I think he was originally going to have this like legal hearing earlier in October. Mm-hmm. But it got postponed, I think, like, right around the time WAP got released, actually.
That's hilarious.
But, yeah, of course he's pleading not guilty because he's saying he didn't do it. But the evidence is, I mean, to the extent that evidence exists, it's mounting a lot that Tory Lanez did do it. And it looks like Meg Thee Stallion's other friend is also, like, taking Tory Lanez aside and kind of selling her out, which sucks to see. But another report coming out of a GQ interview that Meg Thee Stallion did, Meg says that Lanez offered her an amount of money to stay quiet about the shooting.
Oh, jeez.
Which you... There's a part in the interview where Meg was speaking about her late mother and her grandmother's impact on her music. And she said, I want black women to be louder. I want us to be sassier. I want us to demand more, be more outspoken, keep speaking, just keep demanding what you deserve. Don't change, just get better. And definitely taking a bribe from Tory Lanez, the person who shot you in the foot, who you were going to, in the beginning, defend. Because the reasoning was Meg Thee Stallion. This all happened in July during the Black Lives Matter protests.
And
you're
just like, you don't want to deal with cops and none of that shit. So, yeah.
Totally understandable. Completely, like, we get it there. But instead of just dropping it, literally, Tory Lanez released an album about this denial and this... I literally don't know where men get the audacity sometimes. But nevertheless, there have been some people who are butthurt about this whole thing. Mostly The Breakfast Club. They're butthurt and saying Meg Thee Stallion's only talking to white publications because, you know, she had this huge spread in the New York Times. She had this huge spread in GQ where she's talking about the Tory Lanez incident and what her message is and all that stuff. And they're giving her, to their credit, even though those publications aren't, like, the most, like, perfect as far as, like, their understanding of black culture, they're giving her this platform and, like, she's using it.
Any platform, you can go on there. Fuck, go on Fox News and yell about such stuff. All, you know, whatever.
I mean, it depends. Because, like, one argument against going on Fox News or against, like, going on media more general, if you don't trust it, is you can be worried about how they will distort or what angle they'll come at. And Megan Thee Stallion was going to do an interview with The Breakfast Club. It was scheduled. Yes. But she and her people said on The Breakfast Club, no questions about Tory Lanez. Which makes sense because on The Breakfast Club, it's going to be a little more, like, less structured, like a press interview. Mm-hmm. So you might ask off-the-wall questions like that, and that's the elephant in the room. But she didn't want to address that. I think the song on the first album, addresses it enough. So she didn't want to do it, and so the Breakfast Club didn't agree to that sort of, like, side note in the agreement, Meg Thee Stallion didn't do the interview there. Response being Charlamagne Tha God and all those people going on The Breakfast Club accusing Meg Thee Stallion of only going to white publications. You're making this a race thing because, like, Charlamagne Tha God can be ignorant as fuck on his show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very proven. Like,
this does nothing to do with race.
Like, maybe, just maybe, we don't want to have the guy who jokes about 14-year-olds having sex on his show asking a question about Meg Thee Stallion and Tory Lanez's very, like, difficult, intimate situation here. So, like, it's not just, like, a white publications thing. It's literally, like, need to understand the bed you made is The Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm. Charlamagne Tha God fucking chill, dude.
And this will be interesting.
And yeah, we've talked, this has been the rap beef segment. Meg Thee Stallion's pretty clearly coming out the victor here, but we just want to talk about the fucking music here on this podcast. So as we wrap out the end of this, Q-Tip has confirmed that he is working with Meg Thee Stallion on like a collaborative album. So in the Meg Thee Stallion review we just did, I hesitated against comparing Good News too much to Savage Mode 2, in that one's like a collab album with a producer and an artist are working together, and one's like an artist solo project. This collaboration with Q-Tip would definitely be more like a collaboration album. Q-Tip, of course, has been producing shit like legendarily forever. He made that one project with Danny Brown, you know what I'm saying? Yes. So it's like a producing it in the entirety thing. A Tribe Called Quest, Q-Tip, naturally. So I'd be really excited to see that because I think he would bring a really interesting kind of sound to Meg Thee Stallion, exactly. And he would be open to it as well. So that would be
cool. Without further ado.
Yes. And we've made it through that. And so now we get to the second album review of the week. It is St. John's While the World Was Burning. 13 songs, 41 minutes long, and I have never seen a more textbook example for some industry plant horseshit than listening to this.
This is one of the worst albums I've listened to in 2020.
It's one of the worst, most overhyped albums I've listened to.
Oh, extremely overhyped. So St. John had, you know, Roses. He released a song, Roses, and then somebody, Iman Beck, remixed it, and it just blew up because
it's an extremely danceable Future House song.
Yeah.
Shout out to my like audio face like a gripe with the idea that Future House can't go mainstream, and look at here.
It extremely can.
It trended on TikTok. It trended on like a bunch of different social media apps, and it just like is a catchy tune. You can't even really tell it's...
You can't tell who the vocal is because it's just like so pitched and distorted. Remixed it differently. I might pull a flexin' on these niggas like a rose. I might tell them, girl, you cute, but ballin' that shit goes. And then on the table, runs that fuck the rose. I might pull a flexin' on these niggas like a rose. I might tell them, girl, you cute, but ballin' that shit goes. And then on the table, runs that fuck the rose. You know who the color, baby, that you can't tell it's St. John. Like,
and honestly, it's the best I've heard St. John's voice.
Deadass. It is completely different. That's how he blew up. So then it became this whole thing of when he released an album. Oh, okay, cool. It's going to be a whole thing. We reviewed the single that came out earlier and it was okay. But then this whole album is fucking garbage heap.
Literally, like, it's so bland, generic, trashy, trying to be flashy, but ultimately falling on its face in a... massive disgrace because I continue rhyming, but like it is so bland and so dull and so lacking of any sort of passion and effort that you have to feel like a spreadsheet was involved in the creative process of these songs. Like it's formulaic to an almost embarrassing degree for music.
The vocals are horrendous. It's boat skirt level horribleness with the vocals.
Which is a different kind, because Boat Skirt is just like fully unintelligible. This is just like Weekend and Post Malone, but somehow the whiniest aspects of both of them. Yeah. And as bad as you would imagine that together, it's still worse.
Yes. At least we kick it out. He can legit sing. He just does some annoying things with the vocals. But this is just someone trying to be a trap fuckboy. But you know, it's that one loser kid who goes to high school and brings out a guitar and thinks he's all that shit and like starts to sing. And you know that one kid that sits by a tree and does it all the time. And then the songs are all ass.
Yeah, except the Zoomer version of that's like your MacBook Pro and your MIDI controller. Actually, this is a more apt comparison too. And again, like I like The Weeknd. I like much of the time Post Malone. James Blake. This seems like a very bad iteration of trying to do the croony, like kind of tone that James Blake does. Although I can understand people who like love James Blake or like think he's like great, but like this is such an annoying version of that.
It's
Sucks to Be You is like I guess like tolerable and understandable, but it's just like a very uninspired trap and beat song that like would have been sort of blasé in 2018, but now in 2020 is just like an insult to my time.
Mm-hmm. And then switching sides, that legitimately has the same production. It's almost like the same song wrapped in different shit.
No, like I So, like, the beats I use for Power Report, I literally just took off of, like, YouTube as, like, free, like, type beats.
Yeah.
And they sound about the same as these.
Yep.
Like, literally, definitely switching sides. The bass line for it is something I similarly use as transition music for Power Report. It's kind of mad that they passed this off as an album. Freedom is Priceless sounds like... there's a song on Shoot for the Moon, Aim for the Stars, the album by Pop Smoke, posthumously released, yeah. That was about like this. I forget the exact name of it, but it basically has the same bass line. It was ripped for a Gunna song and has the same bass line. So this is just that again in another iteration. It makes Chuck so fucking annoying.
Wrapped, cat shit wrapped in dog shit. Exactly.
Yeah.
Gorgeous is, I think that's the song we reviewed, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And that's like the only passable trap song, I guess, in it. So where it's like, it's generic, it's boring, but it's like, okay, the vocals, whatever, I've heard this 1,000 times, but it's passable. You can put it in a playlist, whatever.
NBA commercial transition music.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, exactly. I could see this in 2K on the loading screen. Like, exactly. It would literally, like, that's it.
But then you get the High School Reunion with Lil Uzi Vert, which might be one of my least favorite songs of this year. It is horrible. The first place I wanna be. I've been a rock star, yeah. Foreign cars, I got too many foreign bras, yeah. Too much money, no, I don't barely talk, yeah. I don't mess up my shoes, I don't barely walk, yeah. Inside us already. It's so bad.
Imagine like the horrible.
Oh god, I can't. Nope. I tried.
Imagine the horrible blippy.
Imagine, I tried again.
Imagine the horrible blippy noises with Lil Uzi Vert that you usually get.
Yep.
But he's trying to sing both with and without the auto-tune while trying to harmonize with St. John.
Yep.
It's like...
it's the worst shit ever.
It's like having fecal matter piped directly into your ears. It's absolutely horrid.
It is. I legit, the first time I listened to it, I just had it in my headphones. I'm like, in order to hate something, you have to know it, or else you're just being ignorant. So I have to sit through and listen to the song 3 times in order for me to nominate it for the worst song in the world award, which I really need to name the Boat Skirt Award, because, God,
it might be the High School Reunion Prom Award after this. It's really fucking bad. Like, it's, I mean,
bad.
Maybe, like, unlike with a lot of songs we review, it'll get worse with time, but, like, that leads, like, that long-ass titled song leads into the next long-ass titled song, which is Monica Lewinsky Election Year, which is...
I did not get my dick sucked by that woman.
Yeah, just, like, a song that, like, I didn't know I could feel, like, more secondhand disrespect for Monica Lewinsky than was, like, already possible, and yet here the fuck I am, Feminist Dan over here, feel like, already, like, getting ready to, like, burn penises after listening to this song. Like...
pussy hat wearing Dan.
Oh, and god damn it, I forgot. This, like, these sick fucks put another Roses remix on here with Future.
Yes, exactly! This is the worst. He put a Roses remix with Future, which is horrible already, too. It's just... this is one of the worst albums we've ever reviewed on the show. And let's say something, because we reviewed Fall Out Boy, for fuck's sake. And that was unlistenable. I couldn't sit through it.
We haven't reviewed a stinker like that in a while.
God.
And just when we thought, like, just when we needed, like, a little bit of respite from that, we get Kanye West.
Exactly. That's the best.
Like, literally hit us over
Pray for me with broke. Kanye West. It's just like, exactly, they just drop kick the door. They drop, stomp on it, and then shoot him in the face.
So, like, that was another, like, really lackluster performance from Kanye West. It was almost as bad as his poll results. But if that wasn't bad enough, you then get into Quarantine Wifey featuring Jid. Jid, who has done a lot of pretty decent stuff lately, mm-hmm. just, like, on his own. I think his production, especially with Earth Gang, is really fun.
Yeah, it's fine. But they legitimately stole the bass beat off of Yaskurski.
Nigga came in his house. I ain't panic, no, I ain't hot. I ain't know the bitch was your bride. He tried to argue with me, then he got fired. I ain't wanna cap or lie. Me and her don't got ties.
Yeah, it's 100% very similar.
It's almost the same damn bass beat, which out of all the fucking songs you rip out of, you rip of Yes Sirski.
And you know you got Lil Uzi Vert like earlier featured on here.
That's
like,
the best part.
That's like a straight ripoff, dude. Like, that's just disrespectful.
And High School Reunion's Prom is already one of the worst songs I've listened to in a long time. And then Quarantine, my feet. I remember the first time I listened to this song, I paused. I'm like, wait. Am I listening to the same shit as Yes Sirski? I'm really confused. But it is, it's just, basically it's a bass-heavy version of Yes Sirski.
Yeah, the bass is more prominent. You don't get more of the weird, chimey things, which, like, thank Christ. But, like, if you had the weird, chimey things, this would definitely not just be getting an award for, like, the Vanilla Ice Award. It would be getting a lawsuit.
It would, yes.
Like, there have definitely been, like, similarities that are less similar than that have gotten hard lawsuits that have won. So, Trap is playing in a really interesting territory where this shit keeps happening. But no, saw a bunch of Spotify advertisements. Fucking like Biggs Burke was like super excited about this shit. Like, oh, this is the
this
best.
Whole I can't thing I've heard about it. People. Everybody keeps. There's so many stuff on it, and I'm like, this is
garbage,
horrendous.
And yeah, I said garbage to the song "Gorgeous." Yeah. It's garbage.
Garbage. And yeah, I don't even want to talk about the rest because it's just shit. You have six.
You might
you
notice
have Sklack, Sklick, Sklickety, Sklack, Sklack, and Kalani on Ransom. And then the best part is the last song is the fucking remix of Roses. So you should just. I'm not going to make Dan edit, so I'm going to hold my tongue.
Really fast, like listening to Ransom one more time, because I could only listen to this album one time, I'll be real with y'all, honestly. The beginning sounds like the worst ketamine hole you could possibly bay in, where you're like, for you normies out there, imagine sleep paralysis. Like, that's what the first half of the song, and then Black and Kalani are there as though, like, it's a normal song.
Yep.
It's like, can we not just acknowledge the trash that I just had to listen to for the first minute of this horseshit?
I just imagined your friend who went to the Genesis Open with us, him just tripping dog shit on ketamine, just like, they're walking around like,
absolutely sunglasses.
Just sunglasses, just like out of his tits.
Fear and Loathing style. But yeah, the last song on here is the only reason this fucker has any money. A song that is completely, it renders his voice completely unrecognizable. And honestly better. Because it's just like, it's a DJ remix. It's a DJ club remix where like the entire song is chopped up and changed up. And
basically
honestly,
it's,
for the
it's
better.
Like Daft Punk, where Daft Punk will completely change his beat and you listen to the original song and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's just like an electronic music like staple. And it's the only thing that makes me like notice St. John at all. This was garbage. This was an utter waste of
this is,
my
this
time.
This is the cure. This is Pfizer getting out the cure and Donald Trump taking credit for it and calling it the Trump vaccine.
This is from Remdesivir.
that's the best tier you can get.
Sean, I'd like to take this moment to cordially apologize for making you listen to that.
Thank you, because I'm not kidding. I had to sit like this on my computer desk right now, by the way, because I got through half the album, and then I finished the other half, and I just sat like this, like, you're gonna get through this.
Hot garbage. Don't waste
some
your
guys,
time.
Some guys can't cross bridges. You can't listen to a St. John album. It's okay. We can get through this.
I will literally have spent more time adding the music samples into this episode than I will ever spend listening to St. John again.
Yeah, that's banned now.
Yeah, absolutely not. Fuck that shit. Moving on, we have some stories about, and we've been talking this year about how artists have been able to survive and cope through this COVID season where you can't do live touring. Short answer, it's not Spotify. But Bandcamp is coming to the semi-rescue here because they are just integrating... they're integrating ticketed virtual concerts, digital merch tables, basically more ways for you to sell things through Bandcamp.
Yes.
And that's great because you already have a bunch of bands who already use Bandcamp. So for most bands, it's just going to be some like add some Bandcamp information here, flip some switches here, and it's all good.
Yeah.
You're no making a new account, and most of all, no building a new audience and telling them to come somewhere
else.
That's
a huge thing because a lot of people already have like if they're big fans of one, they can go to it, and you can always advertise for it as well. So there's a lot of good stuff. I like what Bandcamp's doing there. I think it's fantastic.
No, it's phenomenal. And like this, along with Bandcamp Fridays that was happening earlier this year.
Yeah, that's right.
Where they were not taking royalties for new music on like the day where Bandcamp should be making most of their money in order to give to artists, because artists have struggled this year with not being able to tour due to COVID.
Woke award over here.
Possibly. But yeah, artists have been struggling with not being able to give, not being able to tour, which is their main way of making money. It's their main way of making money because Spotify, Apple Music, Friend of the Show Tidal, and all these other streaming But all those other streaming services have created an ecosystem to which where you can't make money off of the main way people interface with music. You only make money off of these live events. And so thankfully Bandcamp is doing something different here. The thing I wanted to mention is that I can't, one of the things I got like most famously, like maybe we were too bullish on, was SoundCloud going out of business. Like,
yeah, I thought SoundCloud was gonna go tits up, but
yeah,
they're still here and I still use it all the time.
Not only just still here, doing better than Tidal.
100%.
I mean, like, just as far as, like, I'm pretty sure usage is going. Maybe, like, Tidal's monetizing better, I'm sure, because, like, you can monetize off of Jay-Z's goodwill for a little while. But, yeah, that's fine.
This is hilarious.
Yeah. Meanwhile, there is this new record deal simulator on Reddit that's really interesting. Do you have some details about it?
Basically, it's just, like, a record deal simulator. So where you
go on a website.
You go on a site. You do like your whole thing of establishing like your record deal, and it shows you your streams and all of that. So now it's kind of showing people how little money a lot of artists get from streams. Where it's like you get 0.0038 cents or something stupid like that per stream. And so like for Spotify, and it'll be like you get this and that, and it's showing people who aren't like industry heads like ourselves of how shit the industry is, especially the record labels and deals. So it's like pushing it out. So now more and more people who are reading this and getting and kind of like dealing it on their own thing on Reddit are now like, oh, whoa, I didn't realize how bad it is.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of reaction on Reddit and a lot of other social media apps as this thing was spreading among people who are not in the industry, who are like getting to play with this interactive like infographic that shows not just like the pure figures and like the charts and like the colors and things, but things like the artist advance, which is a very deceiving thing. That's basically just a loan that artists get. And then the cost, the marketing, all the costs and the marketing costs going into that. It gets to show you all of that. And I think it's also will be a helpful tool for up and coming creators because like...
It gives you kind of a fair warning almost to it, and it can help you prepare and decide what to do in the best case scenarios, and always the best, you know, always the thing, hire a lawyer if you're gonna, when you start navigating the music industry, get a lawyer.
Yeah.
You don't need it.
Have some legal counsel, some advice, someone you can at least go to if you can't have them on retainer. But the music industry has changed, in a lot of ways, changed in the past 10 years, and a lot of ways stayed the same. Mm-hmm. And if you can navigate those changes in the new territory, as with anything, if you can navigate that and then get some legal help on your side, that'll definitely be to your advantage. And we're talking about monetizing and all these different things and some of the weird ways Spotify works to screw out artists. Here's the story of how some artists are making a lot of money gaming the algorithm within Spotify. Basically, sometimes when you're playing a song on Spotify and you have your app set a certain way to where it continuously plays music, even if you haven't told the app to do so, it'll start picking songs that are similar to whatever you've been listening to. The game is, if you create a song that tricks Spotify's algorithm into giving it a lot of the qualities that a lot of music has, basically making it more popular, then you can get your song into a bunch of different, of those automatically, algorithmically generated playlists that play for people on autoplay.
Yes.
Autoplay is just the way a lot of social media websites, especially ones that are sending content to you all the time, is how they make money. So, like, there's one band, Pavement, they made a thing called Harness Your Hopes, and it's a random B-side. I've never heard of Pavement, I've never heard of Harness Your Hopes, but they're getting, like, dumbass streaming numbers on Spotify, I believe, like, 20 million plays to date.
Don't you try to etch it, or permanently sketch it, or you're gonna catch a bad, bad cold, and the freaks have stormed the White House. I moved into a lighthouse, it's on a scenic way, it's so, so far. Kiwis, they are home,
Just because this song was read into by Spotify's like listening algorithm.
Yes.
It put a bunch of different tags on it for what it sounded like. And it, I guess, sounds like a lot of different music that people are listening to. I'll drop it in to maybe see if like people can kind of hear it and kind of get that sound. But I think it's just really, it's crazy
what Spotify's algorithm, what it can do to a lot of random stuff out there. And yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
To see. It could choose a random song from something that's very obscure and then basically blow it up. It's almost like the TikTok effect of blowing up random songs and stuff here or there, which is just, that's the world we live in now.
It's also adjacent to growth hacking and different ways you use to grow channels, because those are a lot more discreet. What's like, what you would do in normal apps is you're creating hashtags so that the algorithm can more easily find like exactly what that is. Now the algorithms don't even need the hashtags. Like Instagram can scan the image and find out whether you're talking about the election or not. So like they can scan the image and find out.
And then they'll put little disclaimers for the election.
Yes. So like these things are a lot more advanced. They don't need text inputs.
Yeah.
So Spotify's algorithm, which is definitely one of the more opaque algorithms out there, is feeding in this music and adding tags to it as it goes. And it's really interesting how it works. And lastly, in this block, Diplo has been accused of revenge porn in a restraining order filing. Diplo, really notable EDM artist, also part of Major Lazer, just released an album that we reviewed. According to the Daily Beast, which is America's Daily Mail sometimes, the woman's attorney, Lisa Bloom, said the order was filed to block Diplo from distributing revenge porn that is allegedly designed to humiliate her and scare other women out of coming forward.
This anonymous woman filed a restraining order against him.
Yeah. In her, so she posted a Twitter thread. The tweets are like being used as evidence, but like hidden to kind of protect her identity. But like, she alleged Diplo hired a private investigator against her following an argument in an attempt to scare me into not discussing the details that she knew about him. Private investigator knew like her name, address, workplace, but apparently Diplo was like passing around like nudes or revenge porn or something. One of the replies to her Twitter thread reportedly included an explicit photo of the accuser, and Diplo was the only other person other than a key accuser with the photo. So that's the where the worry and the allegation of revenge porn being spread is there. I don't know if Diplo lives in California, but California and a number of other... Oh, no. This is Los Angeles County Court.
This is Los Angeles. So he does. Yeah.
California has some pretty intense policies on revenge porn. Yeah, so
they will fuck you up.
Yeah, and a lot of other states do as well, and that's generally like a good policy to have. But yeah, buddy, no. Yeah. No. And last album we're reviewing of the week, 2 Chainz, So Help Me God. 15 songs, also like 50 minutes long. This was released about a week ago, but 2 Chainz still at it. He's been a pretty prominent rap and trap artist throughout the 10s.
It's for a long time now, yeah.
Yeah, not like super long for some reason. I mean, like I have some memory of him back to like 07 or 08 to some extent.
Yeah.
But most of his major albums started picking up and mixtapes picking up like around 2010 or so. Mm-hmm. So I'll give him that. And as such, you get a very sort of like mature in the sense of covers a lot of bases and topics album within here. Mature in a lot of different sounds. A lot of it is trap heavy, but a lot of it's just like straight up rap and has a lot of like explicit rap references to it as well, which I do enjoy. But yeah, it's definitely a lot. It's very interesting. And I definitely wouldn't have enjoyed it or like liked it even as to the extent that I do from the first song, Lambo Wrist.
Yeah,
Lambo
Wrist.
It's just like, come on, dude. It's like, come on. We're in trap now.
Lambert is just funny.
Yeah. But Gray Area, I really love. It's the second song.
The second track, yeah.
Yeah. Sat up on the stand, told a lie straight to the honor. Old enough to be your daddy, young enough to fuck your mama. All the shit that I have done, I cannot believe in karma. Old enough to be your daddy, young enough to fuck your mama. Young enough to fuck your sister, young enough to fuck your auntie. I ain't messing with your granny, I just juked her at them Xanax. I'm a beast, I'm a dog, got a motherfucking addict. Nigga, tell them pull them up, drop the motherfucking. It has this like weird sort of like distorted almost like distressed flute thing in there.
It sounds like your melodica is having a bad morning.
Yeah. kind of. It's just a really good 2 Chainz expressing his lyrics, doing that really well, rhythmically, tightly matching the production. It's great and it's really solid, especially in a year where a lot of trap that exists is just like complete garbage and respite. This is something that I think the old heads and the new heads can kind of agree on.
Yeah, exactly.
I think.
And even this track after that, Save Me with Youngboy NBA, was, I thought it was actually a decent trap song too, because I like the flow of 2 Chainz. I thought Youngboy was okay on it too, but the production of it, like, this feels like that, again, that meeting of old and young, putting them together kind of and making a decent trap song too. So yeah, it's not uber repetitive like a lot of stuff that we have. I mean, it's not nearly as bad as St. John that we reviewed earlier, but it's interesting in that regard, so...
Yeah, Save Me was, yeah, definitely, it sounded like a Youngboy NBA song for sure, but it was better than expected. Moneymaker with Lil Wayne, I'm trying to keep my bias against Lil Wayne out of this, but I didn't find the track all that sort of representative, especially because you have a lot of really good features in here.
There's a lot of features in here that are, yeah.
Yeah, it's like not feature heavy or bloated, but I'd say like a third to almost half of the songs on here are features. But Moneymaker's kind of just average. Can't Go For That with Lil Duval is fine.
Ty Dolla Sign too.
I do like the beat for it. It's kind of
say,
fun.
I
it's
really
like
an older beat.
Like by older school, I mean like aughts, 2000s kind of rap beat.
Call your phone, you ain't answer yours. I ain't going for the bull like a matador. You text me if I don't reply quick, your trip. I'm Hefe, I'm the highest on the list. Kick it like judo, the numero uno. Yes, I'm the highest. My house so far back in the woods, they can't nobody find us.
That's very fun, very danceable.
Almost reminded me of Big Sean's album earlier too, this year for Can't For That. Can't Go For That.
Yeah.
A couple of those like beginning part of the album where it has that flow, that really good bass beat, and then it's combining old school hip hop with trap and kind of doing the two. So I did like that song a lot too.
It's kind of
definitely going to my workout playlist.
Yeah, it's a very pop trappy kind of turn for 2 Chainz, but it doesn't feel like overly blown pop trappy like Meg Thee Stallion's can feel it. That's worse sometimes. So it's very good there. And then you got Feel Away with Kanye West and Brent Faiyaz, which I tore the Kanye West feature A New Asshole in the St. John one. Here, totally fine.
Totally fine, exactly.
Absolutely fine. the man continues to boggle my mind sometimes.
Because sometimes he makes some of the worst shit, sometimes he makes some of the best shit. I don't understand it.
And Kanye's not too much flair on here. He's not really...
No, he's not really... Hood, no.
And it's definitely not, like, his best feature, even. But he's, like, he's there, he doesn't take up too much more space, and he adds enough to the song to where I'm like, okay, it's fine. But yeah, it's a pretty, like, nice, chill song. And in a lot of ways, it's kind of funny that we reviewed this in, like... contrast to St. John is completely unintentional, but there are just a number of different concepts and ideas that are done better on this
than
St. John's. So like that Kanye West thing is one. Quarantine
Thick
is another example.
Yeah, it's definitely another example of it where it's that, you know, that's much better than with St. John's album of going with Monica Lewinsky thing or going into a couple of different songs where it's just horrible. Quarantine Thing, because that's a solid trap song too. And I think that might be, that one might have blown up. Oh, I say blown up, but I mean one of those most popular ones on the album because I have heard it a couple times in different mix, like playlist mixes and other stuff.
Yeah.
Shake it fast. No matter what you do, don't let them judge your path. I broke my wrist off in the bowl, I need a cash. It ain't no stash if you ain't got nothing in the stash.
Quarantine Thick, he tryna give me lipo. Pussy holy water, put that on a Bible. I might hit your nigga and run, bitch, you gon' need Geico. Rap bitch, but when he hit it, I might hit that high note. Clayco raise me.
Also got Mulatto and the latter half of the track. Really awesome rapping in there. Just really great. It matches it. And like you were saying, with St. John's seem like there's a lot of like raunchiness and ridiculous to no end or like to no point. Whereas this, there's a reason for it. There's some like sort of bearing out logic for it. And there's actually good musical execution to it. So that is great. You get down to Ziploc, which is fine. It's knowable, but then we get to Freelider,
yeah,
which I very much enjoy. It reminds me of that one Bobby Shmurda song that came out, that one Bobby Shmurda song, Hot Nigga, but it like has that like chime thing in the back, mm-hmm. where it's almost like that beat going to it, but it's way slowed down, way more trapped up.
Don't came with a lighter. Brushing, we came with some gravel. Big house came with a Bible. Lambo came with a Tahoe. Yeah. Devil's how I brought a Diablo. We got cheese, lettuce, and shells. Hey. Nigga better duck his taco. I just spent 150 like Macy. Whoa. Told that 50 like Marley. Whoa. No, I can't make it hot though. I was on the phone with Carol. Yeah. That little bitch, she a Thato. Yeah. That little bitch, she a black hole. Every time she come phone, yeah, she on black bro. Yeah. Talk to the plug named Paco.
And Lil Uzi Vert and Chief Keef coming on it. They're not two Lil Uzi Vert and two Chief Keef on
no,
there.
No, they're
it's
fine.
It's a perfect meeting of the generations right there.
Because Lil Uzi Vert's also, he doesn't do his extremely high-pitched vocals on here. He actually has a decent rapping voice in for his feature. And that was the first time I've heard it in a while where Lil Uzi Vert, I'm like, he's actually not bad when he doesn't fuck with the stupid vocals or autotune. He has a decent flow and everything. And it mixed together with 2 Chainz and Chief Keef. It's actually a pretty solid song, too.
Yeah.
It surprised me because I saw it. I'm like, fuck, I'm not going to like this. And I was like, oh, wow, it's actually a pretty decent track.
Again, when you... Everyone knows what you can do with all these artists firing at 4 cylinders. Yeah. But it's like, it's the reason we don't make Priuses with Bugatti Chiron engines.
First off, the engine of a Bugatti Chiron is basically the entire size of a Prius.
Right? It's like, that's why we don't put like full gas into all of our cars, because we have like cars for different purposes, and eventually they'll all be gotten rid of in America because they run out of gas. But like, the idea behind that is that you know what all these artists can do on their own, like to a great extent. Mm-hmm. The way you make a good collaboration, especially, is where to know where to dial up and where to dial back each artist. And Free Lighter is a rare example of that being done well on a trap song.
Yes.
Through the rest of the album, it's pretty good. It's less feature heavy. Really, you only get to a feature with YRB with Rick Ross and Schooly. Yeah. Where's a cool different like set of flows in there.
Yeah, and I like Rick Ross generally. So.
Yeah. Rick Ross in it. And then Tony's Southside Hog Vampire, they're all like nice different like trap songs for different slight vibes. Every trap album has like the selection of vibes in it where it's like a little bit slower, a little bit headier, a little bit more like gritty in that. It's all good. But Wait For You To Die 55 Times, I felt were perfectly satisfying.
Good for ending, yeah. I thought so too. Yeah. I really liked Wait For You To Die. But yeah, overall, actually a pretty solid album, which is surprised because I really haven't heard, like, I don't listen to 2 Chainz often. It'll be like little tracks here, there. I think we reviewed Pretty Girls Like Trap Music, I'm pretty sure, in 2017.
Maybe. I don't even remember it.
And
but.
I remember I definitely listened to that album, and it was okay. I didn't like it too much.
I remember
there was a couple like decent tracks from it, but I didn't think much going into this album, but now I actually enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. And last year, there was Rapper Go To The League, which I remember was just like came out in a particularly trap-heavy time. It was early March last year.
And
I just didn't really want to. Yeah. And I ended up going back to listen to that album, and I was like, okay, it's like, whatever, so. But So Help Me God feels like the most I've enjoyed listening to a 2 Chainz album in a very long time. Because it's a very good mix between, I don't even consider 2 Chainz an old head, because like he started in the later end of the aughts. But it's a good bridging to where I've played this with a lot of old heads recently, and they love it. And you have a lot of new artists on here who are performing at their best, who I think people will really enjoy to get on this album. So it's a good selection from 2 Chainz. Arbitrary Scale this week being off of the unintelligible Lockdown Tears, which actually makes it the perfect arbitrary scale. I'm going to give this moderate to substantial. So it's going to be like one like Eureka County or Yolo County up like north, where like they're near the interstate, so it can spread very quickly. But they're still so far out and rural that like they're going to be the last ones to have to get like teared up.
Yeah. I'm going to give this like a... whatever Fresno or like Madera is, which is probably like
I think they are actually the same county.
You know, that might be the same county, which would be funny. But one of those where it's just it's anywhere from big civilization. It's out. It takes a few hours to get there. So you know, this spread is going to be like spread, and then just like whoosh, go back down.
Rural California.
Real California cheese. Listen to Devin Nunez. By the way, when I drove out there, there was legitimately signs that said, listen to the Devin Nunez podcast for the truth. It just kept popping up over and over, and I'm like, what about his cow?
Yikes.
I never forget the Twitter account.
Yikes. Oh, man, this country's so dumb. Yes. So unsavable. Anyways, somehow we've had so much rap beef during this show that we've got one more, kind of. We'll go for this. So, rap beef again?
Allegedly.
Rap got beef, nigga.
Punk ass move.
Jerry Tone. Nigga, nigga.
Stomp him in the nuts. I'ma stomp him in the nuts.
Stomp him in the nuts. I'ma stomp him in the nuts. In this case, Obama, because he is doing his book tour, he released a memoir. It's gotten a million copies sold, of course, because that's how it is. Another normal neoliberal day. In another one of these press tours, he said for The Atlantic, Obama blamed the topic of the increased numbers of black people who voted for Donald Trump in the 2020 election compared to 2016.
2% more, I think.
Yeah, more black men and more black women and more Latinos voted for Trump in 2020 than they did in 2016, but still by a vast majority, most of them voted for Biden. But still, that was a question Barack Obama was like sort of asked about. That's very funny. But basically, he says that rap music is one key reason why Donald Trump got success among black men, saying a lot of rap videos are using the same measures of what it means to be successful as Donald Trump is. After a month... come on, I can't miss this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
People are... people are writing about the fact that Trump increased his support among black men in the 2020 election and the occasional rapper who supported Trump. I have to remind myself that if you listen to rap music, it's all about the bling, the women, and the money. A lot of the rap videos are using the same measures of what it means to be successful as Donald Trump is. Everything is gold-plated. That insinuates itself and seeps into the culture. Near the middle, I was kind of falling into a Pete Buttigieg there because they're just like the same fucking platitude-y. But like, it's so disgusting. Anyways,
maybe you just blame the fact that Biden is a handsy Uncle Joe and people don't like him.
But like, there is, to some extent, there has been like a glorification of rap music of Donald Trump for like a long time because like, it's like rich like Trump or wealthy like Trump because that was his role in society, and I'm talking about rap music from like the 90s and the early aughts.
Well,
like, yeah, because like that was his idea. He was the apprentice guy. This was his character in society. In the later 10s, the meaning of Donald Trump has changed because he went from like TV character to president. And so that's different, but I don't think those things are the same. Like rap music, if anything, has gotten as political, if not the most political it's been since its existence in the past 4 years.
Really?
And a lot of the artists that are allegedly on like Barack Obama's playlist that he listens to all the time, not this most recent one, but a lot of them are rap artists who do that same sort of stuff that he's complaining about here. So Obama, shut up. Like in a normal case, in a normal situation, I'd be like, you know, you're president for 4 years. Every president has their memoirs and books, whatever. Get your money, dude. But like, shut up. Stop. He is unfortunately still a very influential figure, and he is... making this situation more complicated than it needs to be, so just shut up. Now we move on to the Taylor Swift update story.
Yeah.
We've been talking about Taylor Swift's issue with Scooter Braun, who are the previous people who own the rights to Taylor Swift's masters. And we found out that he has sold the rights of Taylor Swift's first six albums, the master recordings, to an investment fund. Which is insane.
Which is ridiculous.
Investment funds are like the companies that come in when a company's about to go bankrupt and they buy up the company's assets and they basically...
Sell it for scraps.
Yeah, sell it for scraps, essentially. That's exactly right. In response, Taylor Swift has kind of said, this is ridiculous, this is insane, this is the kind of like shifty, wild, crazy stuff that I've been arguing about with Braun with for years now.
Mm-hmm.
And Taylor Swift is so grossed out from this that she is... in the process of re-recording the projects so she'll have new masters for her own.
That's fucking insane.
Like, it's insane that she should have to do that.
I wouldn't ever imagine saying this, but free Taylor Swift, Jesus Christ.
Right? Like, this is...
You sell all of your shit to an investment fund, and she's like, yo, those are my thing. I want to be able to perform those songs or do other things with them that I like. And now she has to re-record all of it.
Finalized over the past 2 weeks for the sum of $300 million. Braun and Ithaca Rights Holdings acquired the master rights to the album June of last year through a $300 million purchase of Taylor Swift's former label, Big Machine.
Yeah.
So basically, they bought the label, so they purchased the rights.
Yes.
Taylor Swift wanted to buy the rights back. They did some fuck shit with it. Mm. And now they're just completely out of her hands. a lot of people in the music industry are treated like this. A lot of times it's women as well. So in this rare sense where I can actually come out on Taylor Swift's side, good for her for fighting for this. She shouldn't have to re-record all of her masters.
No,
but like,
there's no reason to.
Hopefully this will be some sort of like meaning to her, kind of seeing the end of this bullshit. So you could at least see that silver lining.
But moving on to some more label stuff, but this one's funny.
It's hilarious. Morrissey's been dropped by his label, BMG. I forget which, like, one of the five conglomerates that's part of.
Yeah.
But was basically dropped for, oh, Bertelsmann Music Group. It's part of Sony, I believe. And it's related to, yeah, to the gyms. But, yes. Of course, Morrissey's had a number of different categories. With, like, I mean, it's like, get a map and throw a dartboard at a country, and Morrissey's made a racial slur against that country.
He's a Jeremy Clarkson of music.
Yeah, he's a Jeremy Clarkson of music, absolutely. And BMG have appointed a new executive who does not want another Morrissey album. The statement reads, which is, by the way, the statement reads.
The statement.
So this is how, like, balls to the wall they're coming out.
They're just like, we don't want him. Bye.
Instead, the new BMG executive has announced new plans for diversity within the BMG artist roster, and all projected BMG Morrissey releases / reissues have been scrapped.
Ooh.
This news is perfectly in keeping with the relentless galvanic horror of 2020.
It's hilarious.
Oh, wait, sorry. This isn't the statement. This is Morrissey's statement about what BMG did.
Oh, okay.
I thought this was BMG's statement straight out. That would have been absolutely hilarious. But, God, there's that time Morrissey said Hitler was left-wing. There was that...
There's a time where he said Chinese are sub-species.
Subhuman species. There's a lot. It seems like it's time for Morrissey to go, and we're fine with that.
Yes. Which sucks, in regard, because I do really like the Smiths music, but, you know, when you're a racist piece of shit, you're a racist piece of shit. Then.
Yeah. We haven't done one of these stories in a while on Audio Face.
So, you know, a friend of the show, Logic, he bought $6 million worth of Bitcoin. Solid. He watched a lot of Kaiser Report, I assume.
Yeah. Bitcoin is nearing its all-time high that it was previously at, like, 3 years ago.
About three years ago when it ballooned the first time. Yeah, the bubble went up to, what, like 24,000 for one Bitcoin, and we were just sitting there like, holy shit.
Yeah. That bubble's likely over and is likely to sort of like continue going up more slowly. Probably will also be like hyped as there's some turbulence in the economy, but do not get your economic advice from AudioFace.
No, God, no.
And lastly, because we always like to end AudioFace on a fun note, thank you for sticking out for this long boy here, but Sheck West did not, in fact, get drafted into the NBA. This is the second year in a row, I believe, he's tried.
Yes.
Anthony Edwards went number one overall to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Makes sense. Sheck West declared for the draft this year. Was really hoping to make it on some team, apparently.
But my favorite quote is, 29 teams will work at this night. Back to the gym, Ben Ballin.
Welp.
Rip.
Good for you. He also tweeted 6'2", 190, 7-foot wingspan.
And then he just said next draft.
Next draft. You go. You keep trying, Sheck West. You keep being that inspiration that we all need you to be. This has been Audio Face. Thank you so much for listening. We got through that episode mostly with our ideas and credibility intact. Thank you very much for listening. You can find Audio Face on Twitter and Instagram at Audio Face Pod. Our YouTube channel is youtube.audioface.show, where you can get clips every single day of all of our stuff. Sean can be found on Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web, and on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. Twitch at twitch.tv/danfromtheweb, and at youtube.com/danfromtheinternet. All the Power Report stuff's there. My recent appearance on the Damage Report is also there. And thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next week as we round out this year with some pretty fun music. Cheers.
Bye.